Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of March 17th, 2020. Happy St. Patrick's Day! This week, we're back to the Statehouse, but with the quickly evolving coronavirus situation in South Carolina, expect our podcast going forward to focus on that, since it's likely that the legislature will suspend sessions soon. Now, after all that time on the trail, do you miss it? Be honest. I don't. We want to catch you up on the biggest moves that have happened under the Copper Dome, including the $10 billion budget the House passed, the education bill the Senate passed, and what the state is doing for a coronavirus response. I have Mayon Schechter with the state newspaper and Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press in studio at the acceptable distance of about 4 feet each. Also, just so you know, we'll be dropping regular podcasts devoted to COVID-19 response in South Carolina. We know there's a lot happening, and we want to cut through the noise to give you the latest on the ground here with information directly from the sources. We'll give you updates, resources, what fellow South Carolinians are thinking about, and more, including some ways to de-stress from it all. Subscribe to us, and you'll get these podcasts right when they drop. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. And make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can rate and review us. We're also everywhere podcasts exist, including the NPR One app. Now you can listen to all four sections of our podcast while you wonder what to do after you ate all your toilet paper. Is that why everyone bought so much toilet paper? Please send comments and queries, too. Or while you realize that the only way to get Americans off their couch is by telling them to stay on it. Every other day we're talking about Netflix and chill. Now you don't want to add Netflix and chill. What do you want from me, people? And you know what? You can always self-isolate with the South Carolina Lead. And now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. And a lot of this is non-coronavirus news, because we'll touch on the pandemic in our discussion, and we will also be providing regular mini-pods on COVID-19 going forward. Number one, the AP reports that a bill requiring state police to set up a system to track evidence collected during sexual assault investigations received key approval Tuesday in the state Senate. Currently in South Carolina, there's no system to track the evidence called rape kits, and victims often have no idea if police have even tested the evidence. The House passed the bill to create the database last year, and the Senate version made small changes like moving the date to start the database to 2022 and shielding victim information from becoming public. So the House will either accept these changes or the two chambers will have to negotiate going forward. Number two, the AP reports that South Carolina education officials have agreed not to enforce part of the state law that bans sex education teachers from mentioning any relationships other than heterosexual ones, unless the talk involves sexually transmitted diseases. Civil rights groups last month sued the state, saying the law violated the U.S. Constitution. They also say it led to a hostile classroom climate that fostered bullying of students who are not heterosexual. A federal judge last week signed a consent agreement in which both sides agreed not to punish teachers who violate the law. The state superintendent of education, Molly Spearman, now has 60 days to inform all public school superintendents of the deal. Number three, the state newspaper reports that South Carolina's longest-serving legislator and African-American lawmaker, Senator John Matthews, is retiring from office at the end of his term to open up his seat to, quote, a new generation of leadership. He's represented Senate District 39, which includes parts of Berkeley, Calhoun, Colleton, Dorchester, and Orangeburg counties, since 1985. Before that, Matthews served in the House, where he took office in 1975, making him the longest-serving legislator in the General Assembly, spanning 46 years. And number four, the South Carolina Ports Authority recorded the highest February cargo volumes and rail moves ever last month, despite concerns that the new coronavirus could impact supply chains, this according to the Charleston Regional Business Journal. Ports Authority CEO Jim Newsom said in a statement that although February volumes were up year over year, he expects container volumes to be down about 15-20% in March and April. And now for our Florida Man News segment. Every week we give you a headline, just a little taste of the most captivating Florida Man news. This week, headline, Florida man gets coronavirus. Ooh, wait, that's basically a headline in every state, folks. And we also just made that up, but I'm sure it's a headline out there somewhere, right? And just like hearing any news that's not coronavirus related, we buried the lead. Well, dear leaders, we had a busy few months and several episodes covering the 2020 campaign trail. And I know our Republican listeners especially are glad to hear we are back talking about the State House. And we have Jeffrey Collins with the Associated Press here to catch us up to speed on the education bill that passed the Senate on March 5th. Everyone's happy, right? Oh, just kidding. No one's happy. This is politics. But look at the bright side. There's money in the budget. Wait a minute. Isn't that House budget just Governor McMaster's budget? What? A lot of similarities. Mayon Schechter with the State Newspaper joins Jeffrey to give us some highlights, surprises, and some more insight on the $10 billion budget. Ugh, there's not enough money for the base student costs, which has teachers mad. Alas, they can't protest on State House grounds next week as planned because the coronavirus is grinding things to a halt in the state. Come to think, will anyone be on State House grounds even this week? As of our taping, the Senate will be back at least for Tuesday to approve McMaster's emergency funding request of $45 million. But we're expecting the session will be suspended like Georgia and other states. So what does this mean for the budget process, pending legislation, and Santee Cooper? We have a lot to talk about, leaders, and this will probably be a nice break from constant coronavirus news. But you should know that The Lead will soon be dropping regular mini-pods about the virus and its impact on South Carolina. So be sure to stay tuned and subscribe. So let's kick it all off. Hello. Hello, my friends. Welcome. We're all 4 feet apart.
Yes.
Please keep a social distance from your radio as well.
Yes.
And we are in this little studio here, so we'll
Where's the ruler so that we can...
Everyone's safe? Everyone doing okay?
Pretty good.
Good?
Yeah, I think
good.
So.
Well, Mayon, let's start off with the budget. You know, we saw that go through the House, and we saw this $45 million emergency funding request come from the governor. What is this for, and how quickly is it looking like this money will get to where it needs to go, which is DHEC?
Well, right. So the South Carolina House adopted the budget last week. And as you said in your introductory remarks, it is very similar to Governor McMaster's executive budget that he rolled out in January. There's a lot of the same sort of big idea proposals, more money for teachers, more money for particular state employees, but a merit increase all the same. There's some money, new money for roads. There's more money for the state prison systems, which is something that that agency has been really pushing for years to fix things like locks on doors and to pay their employees more. So we've seen a lot of similarities between McMaster's budget proposal in January and then the budget that came out of the House, and it's on its way to the Senate now. So this $45 million. So last week, the governor sent a letter to House and Senate leadership asking them to spend $45 million of the surplus funds for the South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control to help with the state's coronavirus response. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to pull that from a certain fund and then take some of this one-time credit, this one-time tax credit, $128 million, and replenish that. That $128 million tax credit is something that the House proposed instead of a rebate, a one-time rebate, which they obviously adopted and was part of that $50 rebate check last year. Mm-hmm. There's some pushback on pulling money out of that one-time tax credit, but both House and Senate leadership seem to be very supportive of spending $45 million toward DHEC and the state response. This is on top, obviously, of the money that the CDC is giving to the state. I think it's more than $8.9 million mm-hmm. that was part of a larger billion-dollar federal plan package that Congress adopted last week. What exactly that $45 million is going to be spent on, I can't answer that at this particular moment. Those are questions that I'm definitely asking and trying to get more information on. But it does seem that $45 million is very realistic. And as the state reported this morning, there is a plan right now for the Senate to come in tomorrow on Tuesday. All meetings will be canceled, but come in on Tuesday, meet in Senate Finance, pass this House bill that really absolutely has nothing to do with this money for DHEC, but strip all the language out, insert the $45 million in. So pass that out, meet in chambers, pass it there, and then hold basically a perfunctory session for the rest of the week where senators don't have to go in. And this obviously comes after the governor closed all schools across the state through the end of March. And then also after the CDC, as we were talking about just a few minutes ago, implemented this sort of, this 8-week, 50-plus people sort of ban. Which obviously, while the Senate only has 46 members, there are plenty of staff to go around to make that 50 plus.
Oh, yeah, we heard the governor recommending not being groups of larger than 100. That was before the CDC came out with the 50
right.
plus. So we're working to see how we'll be covering that going forward. Jeffrey, this is interesting times. And again, we're talking about the budget, too. But, you know, we're seeing again this camaraderie with the budget, with the lawmakers passing similar spending priorities. But then also just like touch on that. And then also, you know, you've been covering the budget as well. Just maybe the unprecedented nature that we're facing right now in the State House with possible suspension of session?
Well, the House finished the budget in record time, at least as far as I've seen in my 20 years in South Carolina. It was the fastest I've seen them go through it. There was exactly one big fight, and it was over whether all state employees should get an across-the-board raise. Right now, the plan is to give the money to agency leaders, and they can dole it out as they see fit, merit raises, essentially. Mm-hmm. So there was a fight, mostly among Democrats and Republicans, that Democrats failed to get passed to either give a 5% or a 2.5% across-the-board raise. And that fight took several hours. Otherwise, though, like I said, it was an unprecedented amount of camaraderie. I mean, anyone that's been around the state for a while is used to these the governor and the Republicans in the General Assembly butting their heads mm-hmm. over how to spend money. But everybody got along very well. Now, the kicker, though, is what's the world going to be like 4 weeks from now, 8 weeks from now? I mean, we talk about all this money they want to send back for tax relief or $100 million for corrections or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Well, who knows what happens next? I mean, all these priorities may get completely overturned. We're in an unprecedented time right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then, but when you look at the merit-based pay raises, the $42 million, what was the fight exactly? People wanted, they worried that people that aren't going to get the right pay increases that they deserve in the state agencies instead of getting the across-the-board pay raise. What was that fight really drilled down to?
Well, I'll use actually one of the few Republicans that crossed over and wanted to have across-the-board raises was Mac Toole out of West Columbia, a Republican that's been in the House for probably about two decades. And so his point was, he told a story about how he had a boss that enjoyed quail hunting, and he enjoyed quail hunting. And so, but he always wondered if maybe his salary increases weren't necessarily because he was the best employee in the place, but because of who he knew. And so, he says, in that kind of atmosphere, perhaps it's best to give everybody a raise instead of maybe it being who you know or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. On the other side of things, Republicans, they'll say, that supported this merit-based raises instead of across the board, say, who knows better than the leadership of the agency? I mean, shouldn't we give more to the people that do the best work? So that's the debate that goes back and forth there. And then over all of this is, in the current budget, teachers get a $3,000 across-the-board raise. Every teacher in South Carolina gets that. So Representative Gilda Cobb Hunter, the House's longest-serving member, a Democrat from Orangeburg, makes the point, maybe the state employees need to organize like teachers do, because teachers, that rally that was held last year, put a lot of pressure on things, and they're getting a second year of salary increases. So,
and then Mayon, kind of talking about what Jeffrey was just talking earlier about, looking at the future when we're talking about things. I mean, we're already two-thirds away through the budget year at this point.
Right.
Budget ends, new budget starts on July 1st. That's mm-hmm. what lawmakers work toward. They're in that process right now. Like we said, the House has passed their budget. Now it's in the Senate. What are you hearing from budget writers, specifically when you look at the potential for revenue dips next year? Again, this is going to be spread out. Again, we're fortunate this is happening at this time because, again, we're about to end this budget year, so we'll have some impacts this year, but then we'll feel it again next year too. So what's the dip? I mean, you look at things like in this budget, they passed $120 million for an income tax cut of 0.2% on the top mm-hmm. Tax bracket. You start looking at things that might get shifted around, especially when it gets to the Senate, which has to pass its own version, and that will happen at some point while this all trickles out too.
Right. So just in terms of budget negotiations, it's really difficult to say right now. Now that the budget is in the Senate, exactly where all this goes. Right. We don't know if the Senate is going to cancel session for other weeks. We don't know that quite yet. We just know really what the plan is for this week. So obviously, if they do decide to push back session, that has an impact on negotiations, not only in Senate Finance where the budget needs to go, but also on the floor. In terms of revenue projections, no one really wants to go on the record and say publicly that they're freaked out, but they're freaked out. And I don't want to just over-exaggerate it, but there is a lot of concern from both House and Senate leaders about what's going to happen. I mean, think about it. Our state is run on tourism and trade. Mm-hmm. And those are two areas that can be, especially tourism, definitely impacted by what's going on with coronavirus. I mean, we haven't gotten to the step of where some other states are going as far to, I mean, we've seen festivals canceled and big events canceled, but, closing down, some hotels are closing down in some states. Bars and other kind of public establishments mm-hmm. are closing early or just doing certain kind of takeout orders.
Los Angeles. Minneapolis, Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I even saw Chick-fil-A today is moving their stuff around and only allowing kind of, you know, drive-through lines. I mean, we just don't know this impact. And when you think about it, when the Board of Economic Advisors and...
We just look up
just like, I'm looking at the Dow right now down to... 2,250 points. I mean, I'm guessing the circuit breaker's triggered because it's not moving, but...
Right. I mean, that cannot be comforting.
It just opened. We're 35 seconds into it, and it's already stopped.
Right. I mean, when you guys came to BEA and RFA meetings when they would do revenue projections, and they'd always talk about a potential trade war, right? Because that was the big conversation. No one really projected that we would have this sort of mass public health problem at this point. So there are definitely concerns about what this will mean. We haven't heard quite yet if revenue projections are still the same as what they were projected a couple months ago or even a month ago. So we're still waiting on that news. But there is certainly concern about that.
And think about this. You know, we talked about the $45 million emergency outlay that they want to put into DHEC. I don't know the exact figures, but, you know, the tennis tournament next month in Charleston was canceled.
Right.
I'm betting that's at least $45 million that got pumped into the economy considering hotels.
Absolutely.
And that's a high-scale event. You know, you've got the Carolina Cup is gone. I mean, you know, and these are just a couple of examples.
NCAA women's basketball in Greenville.
In Greenville.
I mean, the Masters. Triple
oh, gosh, effect. The Masters
with all the money
impact.
That comes into that. And, I mean, we're just talking, and we're talking April events there or March.
Right.
We're not talking about the summer when, you know, everybody in the state makes their money, you know, east to 95.
Yeah. So, well, Jeffrey, to that point, I mean, I also want to reassure people, too, that, you know, when we look at the funding, we had a, you know, what, $1 billion surplus this year. So they pumped that into a lot of different things. Some of that's one-time money. But we did see that in this budget the House passed, they added three times the constitutionally required amount of money to the General Reserve Fund and also fully funded the Capital Reserve Fund. So South Carolina reserves right now are at $869 million. We're sitting pretty right now. Obviously, we have a record low unemployment. That could change. We're seeing that change in China and how they've been experiencing this. But I'm just wondering, Jeffrey, when you look at this, when you look at this situation again, pretty unprecedented for South Carolina, especially when you look at how we're handling it at the state level. Do you think back to 2008, 2007, when we were dealing with the financial crisis and how it took us time to overcome that? Maybe think that things are a little bit better when it comes to fundamentals right now in the economy, but obviously we don't know how things can change. But it seems like we're in a pretty good position to weather a good bit of this storm at this point.
Probably in better shape than just about any other state in the country right now. And I mean, you know, you talked about the 2007, 2008. By that point, unemployment was either close to double digits or in double digits by the time the economy nationwide started to tank. I mean, there were a lot of problems in South Carolina at that point, and everything was limping along. And yeah, they took a machete to things in the South Carolina State House because things were so bad. All the reserves and everything you mentioned are a very good thing for South Carolina. And again, like I said, we are probably in better position than most states to weather this thing.
But and I also realize, you know, we have our AAA credit rating and we have our debt is substantially low. Like we have plenty of room for debt. I mean, so who knows? We'll probably be talking about borrowing at some point. Interest rates are now zero. So, I mean, that's going to help, you know, if you want to borrow at this point. I'd be interested to know if they want to borrow right now or borrow next year or whenever. I mean, that's going to be something that they look into doing because we have that ability to, you know, leverage our credit rating and leverage our growth, too. So, and then also just kind of wrapping up here, I want to get into education, too. But, you know, the road spending, we're looking at $100 million extra for roads. Mm-hmm. I actually saw Christy Hall at Secretary of Transportation. I saw her at EMD the other day. I think she was just itching to get in the Emergency Operations Center. I was like, oh, you're going to get some more money. She's like, just send it my way. We'll spend it. I mean, there's plenty of things to get done, it looks like. And it's just interesting to know that on top of the, you know, the sales tax increase, the gas tax increase, that they just need more money for roads, Maya, more money for corrections like you talked about.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of needs out there in South Carolina.
These are problems that have been long underfunded for a long time, especially when you look at corrections. But yeah, these roads that this money that would go toward these rural secondary roads, these are considered some of the most dangerous roads here in South Carolina. And these are used roads. I mean, these people use these roads to get around the interstates and go from one point to another point. So definitely this money, DOT, I'm sure it says, is very needed, and they would absolutely spend it very quickly. But yeah, I mean, given the state of things, who knows how things may get shifted around as we go forward.
Jeffrey, I want to switch to education. Yes. I mean, and there's so many great, you know, funding things in that budget, too. I don't want to go into all the numbers, but there's a lot in there. We'll be keeping up with how everything trickles out, especially in the Senate. But switching to education now, the next big story going on out of the State House this month. Even though the schools are closed, the fight still goes on for education. Again, all schools are closed. I'm sure you're aware of that in the state through the month of March. But we did see, again, we're talking about teacher pay raises, $3,000, that bumps us up in the state, southeastern average when we look at, you know, what other teachers are making in the region. And this is something that we saw push from the beginning of session. So, again, it seems like there's some pretty strong agreement on that. I'm guessing maybe the Senate will go along with this, too.
Well, while you and Mayon and everybody else in the South Carolina media universe was out doing presidential primaries,
media elite, Jeffrey.
Yes, yes. Some of us were just...
as I touched my mustache, even though I can't touch my face.
Some of us were in the trenches listening to the 8-week debate on the South Carolina Senate education bill.
Oh, I mean, you fell for us.
Where's my tiny violin?
I think you were playing it on the riser at every press event that we had to go to, Jeffrey, across the state.
Well,
so I think we're both equal now.
But the good news is the Senate actually passed an education bill. Now, the confetti didn't drop
music
from the, you know, there was no mission accomplished banner, nothing like that. Greg Hembree came out, Senate Education Committee Chairman Greg Hembree came out and did a news conference. And I asked him, I said, you know, the typical gestation of a human baby is 9 months. So how are you feeling after you've been debating this for a year? And he said, well, I guess it's more like an elephant. But, you know, in the end, I think everyone's relieved to have it done, and it creates a marker. Mm-hmm. And the House Education Committee Chairwoman Rita Allison, they're going to take that bill, and I'm talking here like we're just going to meet regularly. So just take that under advisement. But she plans on having a public hearing on it, several public hearings on it. You know, of course, there'll be some alterations made, and we're eventually going to end up with a conference committee. So, yeah, that was a big step. We all wanted to celebrate, but in the end, it was just barely, you know, it was like we crossed. It was like, you know, what was it like? You like climb the little mountain and you look up and there's still a massive, you know,
summit.
So,
yeah. Keep going.
So now the other parts of the education debate, I think unless there's some real disaster financially, teacher pay raises are a cinch, a slam dunk cinch. Yeah. No one has said boo about it. The teachers aren't very happy. Teacher groups, SE for Ed, the main grassroots one that formed early last year and ended up putting all the pressure on them, they aren't happy with lack of full funding for base student cost. Mm-hmm. They feel like their class sizes weren't very well addressed. They would like a bigger raise. They would like a teacher bill of rights with a little more teeth in it and some stuff like that. So, you know, they aren't happy. They were calling on that. You mentioned it in your open. They were calling on that State House rally later on in March that they've now postponed because of coronavirus fears. Well, so there's still that push and pull. Now, that being said, though, and, you know, Senator Mike Fanning in the Senate, he kind of has been the voice. He calls himself the voice of the teachers. Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny during that whole celebration, and I put that in quotation marks, over the Senate passing the bill, you know, Brad Hutto, a Democratic senator from Orangeburg, one of Mike Fanning's Democratic colleagues, was asked about, well, what do you think about Fanning saying that no one's listening to teachers? And Hutto said, you know, we all have teachers as our constituents. Mm-hmm. You know, he isn't the senator for teachers. We all are senators for teachers. And it was an interesting dynamic there, because there's this gap that's forming between Fanning and this group of teachers and maybe other teachers and maybe most lawmakers. So we'll see what happens with that gap. And if the teachers on the one side of the gap can pull the teachers from the other side of the gap together to put pressure.
Is it miscommunication, or is it just ideology, or what? I mean, when we look at this, I mean, again, like I said in the beginning, like this is politics. I mean, a lot of them are saying, like, let's get one bill going through and then we can build. I mean, education is not going away anytime soon, last I checked. So I'm just, you know, I mean, in the budget, again, we saw, you know, more money for school resource officers. We saw the expansion of 4K, which is $53 million, another push from the governor. We saw more money for rural school districts, for capital improvements in these districts. And again, like we were talking about, the base student costs increase about around 1%, cost of $26 million. I mean, there are things in this budget and in previous budgets that have been pushed for. So I'm just wondering, when you look at this, I mean, digging your heels in on these things when there is money going for these things, and we're just kind of talking about small items that were basically at the root of this debate for 8 weeks.
Well, I think part of it is that the SC for Ed and some other groups, they're very new to this. Mm-hmm. So they're learning as they go. I think that's a part of it. And, you know, it's Byzantine. It's just there's so much that goes on, and it's slow, and very rarely does action take place really quickly. I think that's a part of it. But I think they're genuine. I don't want to make it sound like they're not genuine. They're very genuine people, and they very genuinely want change, and they're at the front lines, and they're telling people. Mm-hmm. And I think on the other side of things, there's lawmakers that ignore them because they aren't as genteel and because they do rabble-rouse. But on the other side of things, You don't listen to them at your own peril. Sure. I think that they have very legitimate points. But and it's a nice thing to see. It's part of the process.
Sure, yeah. I mean,
I'm always staggered when somebody like gets mad about protesters because I think about the Boston Tea Party. America was created by protest.
We love to protest. We love to complain.
Yes, yes, yes. We love to, and, you know, we're all going to have to socially isolate, and that's a bummer because we all like to get out and march and do things and get together. I mean, you know, look at what happened in Philadelphia when they won the Super Bowl, all the craziness that happened
there.
Don't
talk about Philadelphia in this podcast, Jeffrey. Just kidding. 18 celebrating over there. But yeah, I mean, I totally agree. And again, it is, I mean, it's, that's what you want. That's a healthy democracy when you have people out there protesting, getting engaged, really feeling that they're making a difference. And there are differences being made for sure. I mean, look at this debate, 8 weeks on one bill, and it's still going forward. So,
and there's
going
to be more debate. The whole school funding formula has to get done. Now, that would be the mission accomplished moment, maybe, if they can revamp the education formula. But, I mean, they're, you know, the education debate is not dead. I mean, I know a lot of people are like, oh, you know, we haven't done a huge education bill since 1998 in South Carolina. I don't think this is the end of it. They're going to do a lot of other debate on education. I don't think education goes away anytime soon.
And I think, you know, and you touched on this point, and I think it is a fair point that a lot of the education debate is, I mean, a lot of it's solved through the budget. I mean, there is a lot of money in the budget that is going toward education and even some policy changes when we talk about even like 4K expansion. That is gone. That is happening through the budget. I mean, yes, there's separate legislation, but that spending is happening through the budget. So, yes, I do think, you know, there has been probably a great deal of lessons learned in figuring out how to communicate with one another, but also like understanding each other's positions. But I think for what it's worth, like that is a big piece that needs to be taken away, is that education makes up a huge portion of the state budget every year. It's not like they're just going to knock off that entire thing next year once they get done with this bill.
Well, and to tie everything kind of together here that we've been talking about,
you know,
class size, everybody gets really upset about class sizes. Well, part of the reason class size ballooned is because in the Great Recession of 2008, in the budget, the General Assembly passed a rule allowing school districts to ignore class size rules in bad economic times, and that perpetuated
itself.
So
standard operating.
That's what ended up creating these huge classes that teachers get so upset about. So,
Well, I think we've covered a lot in our time here. And again, like I said, we'll be doing some regular mini pods on coronavirus, and we'll be obviously following what's going on at the State House and in state news as it affects the budget and other things too. But as we close out here, I want to ask you guys maybe what activities you'll be doing during social distancing, during self-quarantine. Jeffrey, you got your kids home with you. You know, maybe some recommendations for parents. What everyone plans, what their future might look like right now. I know we can't see past, you know, what's in front of us, but what are your self-quarantine activities going to be, and maybe your message going forward?
Thank goodness for Disney Plus.
I mean, sports are gone. Frozen 2 came out.
Yes, Frozen 2. I haven't seen it yet, but no, that. Thank goodness for that. And just say a prayer for their mom. God bless them.
Yeah. My own.
And for all the single childless people there, I will be practicing my cooking. I also will be binge watching Law & Order SVU. I haven't gotten through all the seasons quite yet.
I was already going through Netflix and like Hulu and stuff yesterday. I'm like, I don't want to watch any of this. But you really just got to jump in and watch.
But I also think work, you know, when our editors listen back, we're working very hard. We're communicating. We're slacking.
We get it, Mayon. You'll be working really hard. between SVU episodes, solving crime.
I'm working, Jamie, I promise.
I'm following all those memos about working from home to give me tips from working from home, you know?
Yes.
One of mine included, bring your laptop.
Oh, okay. Yes, we're going to actually write one down when I make a list here. That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good start. thank you, guys, and thank you for making time. And we'll be getting through this together. We'll be keeping updated with you guys and others just as we go forward. And I promise, you know, maybe we'll have to do this remotely. Who knows? But we'll be putting out podcasts just like you'll be putting out stories. So thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you, Mayon.
Thank you, Gavin. Where's my free toilet paper?
And my Purell, I gave you $70 for some hand sanitizer.
Cut! this is, no! You do this as a public good? Okay, let's go into one of the bathrooms and steal some toilet paper. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gavin.
You just get a star! It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest 2020 related movements affecting South Carolina. Probably need to change that line. State campaign news and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. and candidate filing officially opened on Monday, March 16th at noon, and will close at noon on March 30th. Now, this is filing for all partisan candidates seeking office in the November 3rd general election who must file during this period. Now, the South Carolina Election Commission urges candidates to use good hygiene practices and to bring their own pens when filing. Also, dozens of local elections have been postponed in the state for the next few weeks. You can find the entire list on scvotes.org. Senator Lindsey Graham's coronavirus test came back negative. He tweeted the news out late March 15th that he does not have the coronavirus. And speaking of Senator Graham, you may have already seen some attack ads airing from his PAC, Security is Strength, against his Democratic opponent, Jamie Harrison, who also will have some ads coming soon. And last month, Nikki Haley hired Tim Chapman, the head of Heritage Action, to run her conservative policy group, Stand for America. Axios says Chapman is among the most influential conservative policy leaders in the country. His hire is Haley's highest profile outside recruitment since leaving her job as UN ambassador. And Nikki Haley also tweeted out that this is a great time to catch up on reading and suggested folks check out her new book, With All Due Respect. And President Donald Trump's campaign spent $50,000 to air a 90-second ad earlier this month in several South Carolina markets, according to the Post and Courier. And the U.S. House of Representatives passed H.R. 6201, the Family's First Coronavirus Response Act, by a vote of 363-40. The emergency legislation expands access to free treatment, creates $1 billion in food aid, and extends sick leave, among other things. Now, this is how our state representatives voted. Democrats Jim Clyburn, Joe Cunningham, and Republican Tom Rice voted for the measure. And Republican Representatives Jeff Duncan, Ralph Norman, William Timmons, and Joe Wilson voted against the measure, several of whom cited the fact that they didn't get the bill in time to do a thorough read-through of it. Now, President Donald Trump supports the measure, and it needs one additional vote for a technical change before it heads to the U.S. Senate. In our final section, Did You Know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. And Did You Know, at South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with some state trivia for us. He is. Russ, welcome back.
Thanks.
Under these trying times, we could all use some interesting and informative trivia.
Well, let's look back to 1918, just over 100 years ago.
Rewind.
South Carolina, the country, and the world went through an influenza pandemic, also known as the Spanish flu. It was severe. A third of the world's population is estimated suffered from it. There were 50,000 cases in South Carolina in 1918. Now, this was right during the middle of World War I, so there was lots of basic training going on in the state, several army posts, which complicated things tremendously. Over 14,000 people died in South Carolina as a result of the 1918 influenza pandemic. Our question is, where was the first case of the Spanish flu in which county in South Carolina in 1918? Which county experienced the first case?
Okay.
So your choices are A, Greenville, B, Abbeville, C, Dillon, D, Marion.
Something about the railroads, right? That was, One more time, Russ.
Greenville, Abbeville, Dillon, Marion.
God. Because people were returning from abroad, especially that's how it kind of spread. These soldiers were coming back and it really spread. So I'm trying to think of the big train.
Well, the first case in the U.S. was reported to be in Kansas.
Yeah. God, I mean, I'm touching my face. I want to say Abbeville for some reason, but then you also think Greenville. AT says Marion. I'm thinking Abbeville. What do you got, Russ?
Well, your lucky guess is correct.
Yes,
Abbeville.
Because there was a connection there, right?
One of the state's smallest counties. No one really knows why. The first cases were in the upstate, and they gradually moved down to cover the entire state. A lot of people attributed that to the rail service in the upstate a good bit more. The textile mills were operating, of course. That brought a lot of people working in close quarters. And then it moved down, and when it was all said and done, Charleston ended up perhaps being the most hardest hit of community. Richland, Charleston, and Greenville counties, the most populous counties at the time, were the hardest hit in 1918.
Interesting trivia with some pandemic trivia. Hopefully we don't see anything near that going forward with this pandemic. But thank you, Russ, for that that trivia.
Okay. Now for our bonus round.
Oh, my God. A self-quarantine isolation bonus round for you at home.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Whew. Why was the Spanish flu so named?
Spanish
flu.
Because, I mean, that I think I maybe alluded to it because they were soldiers serving abroad and it originated
Well, here are your
abroad.
Choices. Oh. The first case detected in the world, this is A, would be in Spain. First case detected in Spain. B, Spain's unique position during World War I, which was going on at this time. C, the two Spaniards, two scientists who first identified the virus. And three, Spain refused to close its borders to other countries during the pandemic.
I think it has to do with Spain and the war, just because I feel like that's how it came over here primarily. But
another lucky guess.
No lucky guessing.
Spain was not allied. Spain was neutral during the war, and as a result, the two sides, the Allied and the other powers, the Axis powers, they didn't want to talk about what was going on in their countries. They didn't want the other side to know the extent of the illness, etc. Spain was neutral. The media in Spain was reporting on the flu when very few other medias around the world were, so it became known as the Spanish flu.
Again, more and that's it. That's the last question you got, right?
Anywhere? Want another one?
No, I don't know if you had like a double lightning round question. No. Thank you, Russ.
Okay.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV. Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and SouthCarolinaPublicRadio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Also, rate and review us on iTunes. It's a great way to pass time while you're self-quarantining and social distancing. And it helps us. So, you know, it's like a win-win, as they say. Win-win. Follow us on Instagram at @SCLeadPod, where you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at @SCLeadPod. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll sanitize our hands, we'll wipe down the sticker, and we'll send it to you in the mail. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the state newspaper and the Associated Press. Our producer and resident dank meme lord is A.T. Shire. Amy Crouch is our supervising producer. Sean Birch and Tom Posey are our executive producers. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on March 16, 2020. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening, and be well, South Carolina. Wash your hands. And secret message, not so secret. I know these are trying times, and we want to be as safe as possible. And we also know people who are going to feel this the most are those local businesses in our communities across the state. So do what you can, as safe as you can, to support them going forward.